Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time is here. That's right, we're talking about Jaws the Revenge. Believe it or not, on Kill by Kill. Well, greetings and salutations, Internet. It's your old pal, Patrick Hamilton, coming to you once again from the Bahamas. This is the Kill by Kill podcast, where we talk about the least discussed component of any horror film, the characters. And every April, we decide that it's time to talk about the things that go chomp in the night or even in the middle of the day. And this year, it's Aquatic Attack April. And so we're discussing the 1987 savior of the Universal lineup, Jaws the Revenge, a movie so good it was made in 9 months from start to finish. And then they kept finishing the movie after it was out in theaters. Hey, we'll get to it. But before we do, there's only one person I trust to make sure that if she's going to build a beautiful sculpture for the beach, it'll vaguely look like a shark's mouth for reasons. The one, the only, Gina Radcliffe. How are you doing today, Gina?
You know, Patrick, I didn't think I would ever miss the subtle nuance of Jaws 3D. But I'm just sitting here thinking back on the good times of talking about Jaws 3D with you.
I mean, that is the thing. Like, you kind of dread it at the time. And then when it's gone, you're never going to get it back. And it you can give, like, Michael's wife a vaguely Bess Armstrong hairdo, but you're not bringing back the magic of those two dolphins.
Yeah, no, it's like the hair metal band Cinderella said, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
Marking, I would assume, the first and only Cinderella reference on Kill by Kill. Like, can we keep it to the one?
Or anywhere ever, probably.
Again, if you're confused, I always recommend that listeners, especially our younger ones, just keep a Wikipedia page open for references. If you hear something you don't understand, it's because we're old. But I don't want to alarm you, Gina. We are not alone. That's right. We have a special guest. Now, you may know him as a TV writer and indie filmmaker of note, but of course, his new horror film, Hanky Panky, releases April 19th. The one, the only, Nick Roth. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm so excited to be here. I'm just, I didn't know how long and desperately I was waiting for a Christmas movie that was also a shark movie. And I got it. I got it. And I didn't know it was the most important thing in my life. And now I realize it was.
Yeah. Few people in their endless debates of whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie really bring Jaws the Revenge into the conversation. A Christmas movie, if there ever is one, and a New Year's Eve movie. Gina, we could have done this for New Year's Eve if we wanted to.
I mean, we can, and but should we have?
No, and it is debatable whether or not we should have done it for this, because spoiler alert, this film is ungood.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the pleasures of doing this podcast is looking at a movie that I previously dismissed with fresh new eyes and mm-hmm. realizing that, oh, that's actually, you know what, I found some things to like about it. Now, you know, every time, and I've seen this movie more times than I care to admit. I have idea why. I mean, it was, again, like a lot of things, you know, a lot of movies are in the 80s, kind of on cable constantly. Right. For a time. So, you know, this is on. And like it has not gotten better with time.
No, like a fine wine, it has not aged. It's just pieces of the cork have floated into the bottle and it's been, you know, kept in a hot garage. It just coming out vinegar left and right. I mean, there are things to like about it.
I think you could still use it to cook with, you know, it's not.
It's true. You could cook off the alcohol and make something out of it. Yeah, surely.
There's it's got Michael Caine. Yeah,
it does. This movie contains a Michael Caine. So if you're in the mood for a Michael Caine movie, this movie will check off that box for you. Absolutely. He doesn't look half bad. And he's Michael Caine after all. He's certainly, you know, you see him, you're like, hey, I know that guy. I like that guy.
I mean, he makes a yeoman's effort at convincingly playing a character named Hoagie.
That is perhaps the hardest thing to buy when it comes to Michael Caine in this movie, that he was named by anyone, nevertheless, his parents. Hoagie. That is not a name one gives somebody who isn't running from the law. Now, Nick, was this your first experience watching Jaws the Revenge, or had you been in its jaws once before?
No, I lost my shark-genity to this film this week. Look, actually, I had never seen Jaws 2, 3, or 4. Sorry, 2, 3D, or Revenge. And I've seen the original Jaws many, many times. So
sure, yeah.
I just jumped at the opportunity, higher than the shark jumps out of the water in this movie, to have an excuse to watch. But were you roaring
while you were doing that?
The whole time. I did laugh out loud several times watching. But it was really fun to watch 2, 3, and 4. I watched them all in the last 2 days. And,
oh wow. Well, that feels
kind of insane, but also just really happy that it happened.
I mean, there's a whiplash. Like, there are problems with Jaws 2, obviously, but then there's some really cool sequences in it that I genuinely like.
Jaws 2 feels like a movie, you know? Maybe it's a misfire, but it's a movie. I don't know if I can say that about
it. Its greatest sin is that it's not Jaws. But then you could also say that about almost every movie you watch, because you know what they aren't also? Jaws. It kind of sucks for every other movie that you're not Jaws. Hey, I like The Sting. You know what it isn't? Jaws. It just isn't. And so in my mind, it kind of works. Apparently it was a fucking nightmare to work on, but that's for another day.
Can I say one thing about Jaws 2, though?
Absolutely.
I actually think that Jaws 3 and 4 at least settled this problem, is that Jaws 2, it takes 51 minutes before Roy Schneider finally develops those pictures that we see the camera take in the cold open of the movie. And then it's another 20 minutes before he spends the entire movie trying to convince everybody it's a shark. It's like, we're here to see Jaws 2. We know it's a shark. How do we have to spend the whole movie listening to all these people being like, I don't think it's a shark. It could be anything. It could be a
none of those people
out there.
Were convinced by an actual fucking shark swallowing a child in front of them. They all saw it and they're like, I don't know. I don't think so.
Orca washes up with shark bites and they're like, I don't know. Maybe he got hit by a speedboat. So I appreciate very much in Jaws the Revenge that there's never a moment really. They know it's a shark. The question now, is it a psychic shark? There are questions to be asked in this film as well. But we know it's a shark. Nobody thinks that Sean gets, you know, killed at the beginning of the movie by not a shark.
Well, they're also rather dismissive of it. Like, well, it could happen to any. Well, okay.
Right.
We have to do some setup first, because otherwise we're just going to launch right into this. But I will say, I don't understand how Sean fucking dies. I understand how he loses an arm, but when, after he loses the arm and he collapses in the boat, like, hey, I don't know that I can steer this. I don't know that I can operate with one hand. Maybe if I shout to one of the high school band members, they will come out and fetch me. And then the shark just like comes out of the water and it sucks him out of the boat like a Kirby, like one of those Kirby.
That's the part you don't understand about this movie.
That's the only, every other part
the biggest issue in the film.
Everything else is like a Swiss watch. It just makes perfect sense.
Everything else is perfect. If not for that one fault, Gina, this would be a modern classic.
Look, that kill is maybe the only one in the movie where the blood comes after it's supposed to. as opposed to just there being like blood in the water, like random. I think at one point he takes a bite of a boat and there's blood in the water.
Yeah. Yes. There is one where he draws blood from a barge, which I'm not a barge guy. I'll be honest with you. I don't know how they work. I assume they're kind of like a flat boat, but apparently they have veins and arteries. Or did that blood come from the shark? Like he ate a bunch of wood and is like, oh, I've got splinters in my mouth. Oh, like, wow. Is that what
they're kind of working to make it make sense?
If you eat like a tortilla chip and like cut your gum or something like that.
Yes, exactly. It's like the barge is a tortilla chip. See, Gina, even almost 8 years into this, you're still laser focused on finding solutions. Vital part of this podcast, and people need to be taking notes because you're figuring out in real time.
Where were you guys when Universal needed you in 1987?
I was like 14. So
very quickly, because like who cares about the format of this fucking show anymore?
There's no plot. It's right there in the title, Jaws the Revenge.
Right. But here's the thing though, Gina. It wasn't originally called Jaws the Revenge. The first title for this movie was called Jaws 87. And it was pitched as Surf Punks versus a Megalodon.
All right.
Hey.
That script was written and immediately filed in a round drawer on the floor of the offices of MCA.
Did they recycle those same Surf Punks or the Lost Boys the same year?
You know what? Surf Punks were just in the air. I think that it was, I mean, it's the same year that Lost Boys comes out. So something was in the air in the Burbank Universal City region where people were into this kind of thing. But they're like, oh, Lost Boys is beating us to the punch. We'll never get there in time. Let's bring back some old cast members.
Whatever you do, don't let Jason Statham know about this surfer punk pitch.
Well, that movie they've been trying to make since the book came out. Like there are so many versions of Meg that didn't get made. It's a miracle that any version of it did get made. And then the version they did make, it's almost like I would say that's more of a movie than this. I'd rather see him. This 50-year-old man shredded within an inch of his life, who is never seen for the first 45 minutes of the film without a beer in his hand, is somehow a Megalodon's arch enemy. And then they fucking figured out how to make a second movie out of it. That's crazy town.
The second movie seemed to be riffing a lot off of Jaws 3D, actually. I just like Jaws 3D. It's interesting that this is the one where people are like, ooh, underwater tunnels, and then like you get Deep Blue Sea and the Meg 2, and like all these people are like, let's get Jaws 3D right this time.
And I would argue they got it right the first time because none of these other films have drunken push me pull you contests. Like you need that. You need half the cast to be blitzed out of their mind on cocaine. That is how you make a Jaws 3D come to life. You need one guy with a t-shirt that says, let a gargoyle sit on your face. That's a movie. That one guy. You don't have a lot of animatronic eel scares in Deep Blue Sea. They seem to have absconded with that fact. But all right.
And there's no Simon McCorkindale being the most over the top anyone's ever been in anything. He's so good in Jaws.
Simon
3D.
McCorkindale and then his assistant who's also kind of in love with him and Simon McCorkindale's kind of in love with him. And that is the love story that I really like in that movie. It's not explored enough. Or the fact that Simon McCorkindale almost manages to climb a rope away from a shark. He almost escapes a shark by climbing a rope. That's how good that movie
and
is.
And yes, and yet all of that makes more sense than anything that happens in Jaws of Revenge.
Yes, I absolutely agree. But how did we get here? So obviously, like 78 Jaws 2 is like it's got two directors. It still works as like an aquatic proto slasher. It's a movie. And then after that kind of flops at the box office up against the juggernaut that was Grease, people are like, all right, let's let this rest. Like, let's figure out another direction here. This is where National Lampoon's Matty Simmons enters the scene because he had a development deal with Universal after Animal House. And he goes, let's make like an airplane style parody of Jaws. And they write a script called Jaws 3 People Zero, written by John Hughes of all fucking people. If you ever have the opportunity to read the script, I highly recommend you do so because it's bug fuck insane. It has almost no Jaws action in the movie. It is almost entirely a different movie. And then occasionally a shark happens. The shark disappears for wide swaths of the film.
So kind of like Jaws 4.
You know who is going to be the lead of Jaws 3 People Zero is the guy who is the voice of Squidward on SpongeBob SquarePants. I shit you not. But, you know, he had a great second act. Jaws 3 did not, because they ended up making Jaws 3D.
He did the right ocean project.
Now, I went to the theaters 3 times to watch Jaws 3D. That film made money. It limped to that money, but it made some money. But what gives birth to Jaws the Revenge is the summer of 1986, in which Universal is banking a great amount of their box office hopes on one film. And they've got so much in the pocket on this one. It sounds like a winner out of the mind of George Lucas and Marvel Comics. This sounds like a winner, you say. Uh-huh. It's called Howard the Duck. I dare you to fucking watch it.
That should be the actual subtitle. Howard the Duck, Colin, I dare you to fucking watch this.
Yeah, that's definitely another one that people will try to tell you. Oh, it's not that bad. It's actually kind of good. No.
No. It is bad.
People are not your friends and should not be trusted.
It's like, I like one part of it, which is the force lightning. It happens at one point. I'm like, hey, that's good force lightning. Everything else in that film sucks. It just doesn't make any sense. And it just dies at the box office. So Universal is in trouble to the point which its parent company, MCA, starts looking for people to bail them out of the terrible sea of red ink that they are in. And Sid Sheinberg, who is the CEO of the company and had been running Universal Pictures and had been a highfalutin, you know, agent once upon a time, reaches into his bag of tricks and says, what the fuck can we do to start making money? He goes, I know what we'll do. We'll make a Jaws movie, but it's going to be more like a people's picture is how he is quoted as calling it. Something that focuses on the characters and happens to have a shark in it. That's not a bad idea, necessarily. Thing is,
I disagree.
Yeah, I was going to say, Patrick, we've been doing animal attacks movies for, this is like our third year, fourth year doing this.
It might be our fourth year, actually.
Have we ever at any point, even the ones that are good, said, right, you know, boy, I'm glad we spent so much time with these human characters.
I would say. Yeah,
what's he worried about? He's going to make a shark movie that won't appeal to the shark audience? Sharks in the movie.
Sharks did not buy any tickets to the first Jaws. They certainly didn't buy any to 2 or 3. So you don't really have to like worry about offending them.
I do.
Oh, Oliver, you're not welcome here.
Why not?
Because you don't know what we're talking about, and you've never watched Jaws 4. And when I asked your grandfather not to watch Jaws with you, what did you two end up watching?
Jaws 2.
Yes. All right, leave. I'm never going to forgive him, and I'm never forgetting you, and you were 6 years old.
It wasn't my fault. Maybe.
I'm not blaming you. Obviously, I'm blaming the retired gentleman who heard that and found a lawyer way around it. Okay.
There's a fourth one?
Yes, there's a fourth one.
Good question.
Okay. That gets edited out. All right. So, obviously, they what they want is something that isn't so dependent on special effects and just has good character moments that they think that's, well, that works in Jaws. You've got these indelible characters in this fantastic script, and it came from a book, and it was a bestseller. Like, everyone wanted to be a part of it. It's endlessly quotable. It's so fun to watch. We just kind of get back to that formula. You know what we do? We bring back a star from the original movie. And who do they reach out to but the one, the only, Roy Scheider, whose response when he was asked to be a part of just the beginning of this film, a cameo, his response was, quote, "The devil himself couldn't get me to do another one of those movies." That doesn't bode well.
No, that's not a promising start.
It's the thing is, Scheinberg's got an ace up his sleeve here, Gina. And that is the fact that he has been sleeping with Jaws the Revenge star Lorraine Gray since the early 70s. In fact, she is his wife. And so he's like, hey, he rolls over one day. He says, hey, do this for me so we don't have to sell this studio to Toshiba. And she goes, okay. They sold the studio to Toshiba anyways. They make this thing a green light. They set a release date for July. It is fall of 1986 when this happens. This movie has 9 months to both be written, be produced, be filmed, go through post, and land in movie theaters. They barely made it. And even when they made it, they still fucked with it after the fact. 9 months. That is not enough time to make a Jaws movie.
Yeah, they have you seen both endings to it, Patrick?
I saw the original ending in theaters. I've seen it on a subsequent DVD release. I do not own that DVD currently, but there are enough rips of it on YouTube to have reviewed the footage.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, the you know, Mario Van Peebles lives or Mario Van Peebles dies. That's the alternate endings of this of these movies.
And yeah, that's going to make or break the legacy of this film.
With this supporting character, whether or not he gets killed off or not.
Does marine biologist Jake narrowly survive or not?
They talk about him after the fact, but he loses so much blood that it is, I find it rather impossible that he managed to survive that attack. He is taken to the bottom of that ocean by that shark. And then I guess the shark forgets about him. He's like, you're not the person I wanted to eat. I want a Brody.
Yeah, he's not. He's like,
wait a minute, you're not Brody flavored. Yeah, it's like I think the main reason they actually killed off and I'm just speculating is that it occurred to them, it's like, oh, we haven't killed off a major character in this movie with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, you know, is he a major character? And there's kind of like a, sure, I guess. All right, we'll kill
word count, he absolutely is a major character. Do you remember anything that he said other than constantly referring to his own hinder?
No.
Does Hoagie's plane count as a character? Because the shark really goes to town on the wing of the plane. And
listen, these sharks, they get a taste for something, whether it's a boat or it's a helicopter or it's an underground seaquarium. And they just can't get enough of it. And Jake, the aforementioned Jake, tries to explain this before it happens, that the shark will, quote unquote, be attracted to the electromagnetic pulses from the plane's equipment. And you're like, that doesn't sound like science. It really does not.
No, there
even
is,
if it's true.
It kind of sounds like science.
Yeah. A lot of this sounds like, you know, very much, you know, audiences are going to accept all of this at face value.
Yeah.
And that is why, they have to, because otherwise the from like the first 10 minutes, the plot completely falls apart, because the basis of this plot is, and I really feel like I should have written this down on a whiteboard before I tried to explain it.
sure.
Is okay. So we've got. Now, we should mention that the third movie is, forget the third movie, never happened.
Yeah, that's gone. That disappeared.
So, second movie, yeah, kind of a little bit. But the first movie, shark dies at the end. He blows up. Mm-hmm. Second movie, shark dies at the end. He blows up.
Yeah.
Third, now we're at the third movie, for argument's sake. This shark is getting revenge for the deaths of these sharks that came before it.
Yeah. He's in a shark mob. And when he sees his countrymen go down, as the poster tells me, this time it is personal, Gina.
Okay, real quick. How, which is more, the amount of sharks blown up in Jaws or the amount of Death Stars at this point blown up in the Star Wars franchise?
I
think it's three of each. At least at this point.
Well, it depends on whether, I mean, here's the thing. The shark blowing up thing is somewhat variable because he's electrified in two. I mean, there's explosions, but not like boom, boom explosions. And then here, the original cut, he's just stabbed real hard.
Yeah. He's like run through like a vampire basically.
Right. He gets, it's like the Princess Bride, and he just gets stabbed really, really bad. And then he sinks to the bottom. And 5 days after this movie was released, they got so many bad audience complaints about that original movie that they're like, oh, fuck, we need to change this to an explosion. So how does the shark in this movie explode that you can only watch today? Is this amended thing. We don't know. He's stabbed so badly that the insides of him explode.
Listen, have you ever stabbed a shark? I don't know what happens.
It's very true. I've never stabbed a shark with a boat.
I'm just busy over here writing down vampire sharks to pitch to Statham.
But like, so I'm not even finished with the whole shark getting revenge. Because so that's how the movie opens. And also you have to buy that everybody, despite the events of one and two, everybody is still perfectly fine, working near the water. Michael like lives on a literal island. He's like a marine biologist. And sending out his kid on a tiny little rubber boat to be towed around.
Right.
Everybody's just jumping in the water. They don't care. No one's traumatized by the events. They're fine. But yes. Michael is, I mean, not Michael. What's the brother's name?
Sean.
Sean. He has become a cop at some point. He gets killed by the shark. And then that's not enough. So the shark has to take out everybody in the entire family. He's right. Like the mafia. He somehow catches wind of the plans that Mrs. Brody has to in her time of mourning is going to fly down to the Bahamas to spend some time with Michael and his family, and follows her.
They make these plans in the middle of the street of Amity Island, nowhere near the shore, mind you. They are coming out of an ice cream shop that is open in December in Amity Island, and he hears through the grapevine she's headed to the Bahamas with her oldest son, and he's like, I gotta start flipping and flapping my way south. And he's there within, 3 or 4 days? That shark is moving.
It's just like none of this movie, it really, really depends on it's on audience, suspension of audiences, believe more than any other movie I possibly have ever seen.
Well, look, if you buy that they're psychically connected,
mm-hmm.
then I don't think the problem is that they're not next to the shore when they make the plan to go.
Well, what is the range of shark psychics?
I think the shark telepathy probably maybe covers the whole of Amity Island.
Well, he's got hell of coverage. He's got better covers than I have here in LA.
And listen, I know it's a long way to get all the way down there, but it's not that. I mean, it's just, sharks are fast. He doesn't have to stop, right? They can't stop. You can just go beeline straight for the Bahamas.
How long does it take them to get down there? He's like a torpedo with teeth. Yeah. Okay. I'm buying what you're saying.
That's not the biggest problem for me. I think, okay, look, the shark is, okay, telepathic shark coming after them. Okay. Well, I'm surprised. You know, can they fly directly? Do they have to stop? Is there a layover? I buy that the shark gets there. He has no bags to check. He's going express. You know what I mean?
Right. He's TSA pre-checked. He can just breeze through those lines. He doesn't.
Maybe there's a good
care.
Transatlantic current. I don't know how. I'm not a climatologist.
He's part of that thing that the turtles catch and Finding Nemo.
I don't know
how oceans work.
Ride the crazy wave, bro.
We need more sharks riding crazy waves on screen. This needs to happen.
I think in the grand scheme of how problems of how fast people get places. Yeah. I say Finding Nemo, Game of Thrones, and then distant third, Jaws the Revenge.
I just want to, we need to keep track here because we keep saying this isn't the biggest problem with this movie. But we've already mentioned at least 5 to 6 giant fucking problems.
And still not the biggest one for me.
So I just want to keep track because everyone has to come up with one of the one biggest problem with the movie for them. I've already told you what mine is. I don't understand how this shark can be a Kirby and suck someone off a boat. And if you got a better one, you just come at me with that. But before we get to that, I want to read this one written element of this film that Steven Spielberg published in the LA Times to the director of this film, Joseph Sargent, a man who made one of my favorite movies of all time, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. So he's not some schmo, right? He may be a journeyman, but he's made some fucking films. And this is what he wrote to Joseph Sargent and published it in a fucking newspaper. When it is brought up about Jaws and his experience on that set, Spielberg writes this: like a Vietnam vet, I came home too and managed never to think about the year 1974 until I started reading Jaws the Revenge. I got to page 18 and found myself holding that service revolver and discharging it until empty into the Atlantic Ocean. I just couldn't go on reading because it brought back so many memories. Good luck, Joseph Sargent. Bring a lot of Joseph Conrad to read while you're waiting for your next shoot. Call home often and talk to the people you love. With tremendous sympathy and 2 winks of my right eye, Steven Spielberg. It's like you're signing your death warrant. This reminds me of the Vietnam War. This is a movie that was nominated for a fucking Oscar for Best Picture.
Weren't you in charge? Well, that movie was terrible to work. That movie that I was the boss of was an awful this movie to work on.
Gave me a lifetime blank check. Is the one of the worst experiences of my entire life. And you are fucking insane if you want to make one of these movies. But you go ahead. He just pats Joseph Sargent on the head and pushes him off to make this fucking stupid movie.
Well, at least it's going to be quick, right? They've only got how many months could there possibly be left on the clock by the time I looked it up, by the way. It's the gestation period of a great white shark is 12 months.
Pretty much.
So we're faster than it takes to make a new shark.
The other thing I want to note before we go any farther when it comes to Sean's death is that over the credits, we are shown the seafloor of Amity, and it is fucking disgusting. What is wrong with these people? This is how they live. Why has the shark not complained up until now? Everywhere he goes is another shitty tire and sunken boat. Have they never dredged the floor of this joint? It's ridiculous.
That's why it's so mad.
Scott, that's the revenge. It's an environmental message.
It is. It's like, don't fuck with sharks. They remember who you are and follow you on vacation. So I want to note, for the record, you know, Gina, we love a good teenager's bedroom on the show when it comes to our slashers. But rarely do we get such sights when it comes to our animal attack movies. And here's the closest we've ever really gotten. And that is the kitchen of the Brody household, which has that fridge has some live, laugh, love level collection of bullshit. I really do not understand. There's a sheet of paper on there with a picture of a sinking boat that says, quote, "The only difference between this place and the Titanic is that they had a band." Well, that's quite a memento. Your husband almost died on two fucking boats. And you thought this was a fun decoration for him to like grab a beer from? That sounds crazy to
you
me.
You don't have to get eaten by a shark but to work here, but it helps.
Like, you don't feel that this is bad vibes to send your youngest son off to pick up a piece of wood out of the surf?
Well, like I said, everybody is totally untraumatized by multiple encounters with great white sharks.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Southern California here, and I don't go into any body of water without thinking about Jaws. These people lived these events, and it just, their memory is wiped.
Like, how are you just not living in the middle of Kansas?
I don't know.
Now, this really, is another really thing that probably falls under the category of not the biggest problem in the movie, but it is the fact that the sort of this inciting moment here is that he's got to go get this one log off this buoy. Like the way that they make it sound is it's like the fishermen won't be able to come home and everyone will starve because they'll have no sushi in the morning or whatever. And like, and he gets out there when he looks at it, it's just like, it's in the middle of a bay. Like, yeah, it's not stuck a problem.
Under one fucking buoy.
This couldn't wait till morning?
Yeah, don't run into the buoy. Guess what? You're not going to run into that fucking log. How about that?
It's just a log.
Hey, put some lights on. It's like, what, 7 o'clock at night there? Maybe the fishermen should be home already.
I feel like they paid a lot of money for the prop log because they really had to, they tried to milk it. You know what I mean? Because after Sean gets dragged to his bloody demise, then like dramatically the log pops back up like, oh man, it was this log all along.
So the question is, who placed that log there? Did the shark place the log there?
Yeah.
Just setting traps.
That's the best he can do for bait. He's fishing for Brody's.
He has been watching their reaction to random logs in this bay for how long now to set up this hit on this one guy? How does he know that the Brody kid is going to be forced to go out there and deal with it?
I was just thinking, I think my favorite moment in this entire movie, you reminded me, Patrick, when you mentioned the refrigerator, is then this is around the time that Sean gets called in to take care of this urgent log situation.
The rogue log, yes.
So, you know, two things, they've still got the ancient old lady secretary from the first movie working in the police station and an enormous portrait of Roy Scheider on the wall.
Just in Cinerama scale. It's 70 millimeters, this picture of Roy Scheider. Like, we're going to get you in this fucking movie.
God damn it. You're going to at least have a cameo appearance in this movie.
We paid for this 8x10 and God damn it, we're going to use it.
Yeah, it looks like they've got a promotional still from Jaws 2 on the wall.
Weirdly, it is signed Roy, we love Roy Scheider.
Thanks for everything, Roy.
You can use my face, but my ass is out of here. Love, Roy Scheider. And yeah, the other thing is like, there's another cop on duty, but he can't respond to the log problem because he is at a different part of the island responding to cow tipping. So did the shark pay people to tip that cow?
Everybody's in on it. Everybody's in on it. Everybody's in on it. Trust no one.
Oh my God. This is my QAnon. This shark is able to manipulate so many fucking events. There's no way he can communicate to this many people about. And then Sean gets his arm eaten off, kind of, because you can really tell his arm is underneath that raincoat. Like, they really didn't solve the how do we make his arm look like it's missing problem. And, like, you want another day to figure that out? No, we got to go to the Bahamas tomorrow? Okay, let's do this. And so he tucks his arm into his little coat. And he reacts like, ow, this should hurt more. Then he kind of panics. Then he doesn't. And then he sticks his head over the boat. And somehow he doesn't get his head bitten off. He just, how does he get over the fucking boat?
I mean, I assumed it was just a, conveniently timed, boat tipping over thing.
Oh, true. And this shark loves to jump on boats. This is like the one thing the screenwriter picked up from the first Jaws. Is like, people love it when that shark jumps up on a boat.
He's just like, how you doing?
What if we have a shark that loves to belly flop on the boat? You're going to show that? No, not even once. Just the aftermath, a whole lot. And then, yeah, Sean gets swallowed. And the next thing you see is someone in the sheriff's office. This was a box full of stuff and his gun holster. Which, where did they retrieve this gun holster from? The belly of this non-existent shark? Okay. And like, we thought you would want your dead son's gun. You did? That's what you thought she wanted? I'm going crazy. How did they get the holster? Why did they think she wanted it? It's not helping. I don't know why you think this is helping.
There's some pacing issues in this film, and I think that one of them.
So is that the biggest problem, Nick? No. Is the pacing issues?
I have an answer to biggest problem. Do you want to
know
what
all right. Oh, okay. I'll table that for now.
Okay. Do you want to table it? I'll come back.
I'll table it for now. Okay. Sure. But unless you've got it in a chamber, I mean, then I'll tell you.
I definitely do. Look, I'm just going to out with it. You can edit it and make it sound like I said it later. The biggest problem in this movie is that it's not from the shark's POV more, because Jaws the Revenge. And if Jaws is getting revenge, I go into this thinking, oh my God. And it opens with POV shots of the shark swimming around and I'm like, we're going to finally get Jaws, a story where Jaws is the protagonist, but he's not. And so I found that very disappointing. I think that's the biggest problem.
For that, you're going to need to read the book novelization of Jaws the Revenge.
Oh my God.
Is it from Jaws's POV?
It is often told from Jaws's POV. It also contains a subplot with an attempt to justify why the shark is specifically hunting the Brodies.
Okay.
It's great. It's a real good fix.
Does it have like a really, really repugnant sex scene?
As far as I'm aware, it does not contain a repugnant sex scene, nor does it have a long extended diatribe about the mayor being connected to the mob, or all the stuff we all love from Peter Benchley's Jaws, all the stuff that was so good it had to make it into the movie. No, this subplot in Jaws the Revenge novelization is that the shark is being controlled from the Bahamas by somebody using voodoo.
And
I'll repeat that. Voodoo.
But does this person have some sort of personal beef against the Brodies?
Yeah, this witch doctor has some. What did he vacation once in Amity Island and not enjoy his stay? He was hassled by the cops.
Did it, like, his father's like hot dog stand like close down because of all the business lost from the first shark attack?
I don't know. I don't have all the details. All I have written down here for this subplot is shoving all the bing bang. He's a witch doctor.
I would love to see the movie where it's like, it's Melvin Ben Peebles would have been the one who's there in Amity Island.
But he's the mayor. That's the thing. Like, he's got a legit job. Melvin Van Peebles is the mayor, and he gives that weird dedication to the statue that looks like a shark on the beach.
Oh, geez. Well.
So This is just an invention of the guy who wrote the novelization based on one line where Michael goes, this isn't voodoo. And he's like, but what if it was? And then he writes an additional 50 pages based on it.
I can solve everything in this movie. I can solve all the problems. Like, this makes
total sense now.
Does the witch doctor have like a little tiny doll shark in the book?
I don't know.
He's like swimming it around and then making it bite Brody's left and right.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he has dolls of the Brodies, and it's just like a tiny toy shark that he just like wraps in twine and puts it in a box and lights flowers on fire again.
Well, I think this.
My apologies to anyone who has practiced hoodoo or anything like that. This is completely terrible. What? But I didn't write it. I didn't do this. I just had to bring it up because it's real.
I don't think it solves the logistical plot holes.
All right. But I would say that would knock your biggest problem of the movie down at least five.
If it's from his perspective, I'm all in.
I want to go back to the telepathic shark theory. Mm-hmm. Because sure. that would explain why near the end of the movie when Mrs. Brody is like, fuck all this, I'm going to go get this thing myself. She has flashbacks to not one, but two separate and completely separate times events that she was not there for.
No, she was not there for either. She certainly wasn't there from the shark's perspective when it comes to the banana boat attack, nor was she there when her husband said, smile, you son of a bitch. And blew up a shark.
She wasn't there to see Sean's death.
No, but she saw the first movie, so she knows.
Yeah, maybe they made the events of that tragic event on Amity Island into a movie, and that's what she's seeing.
No, I think it's more like it's like a Dune Bene Gesserit. Like she's the Kwisatz Haderach, and she's got like ancestral genetic memory that's being.
She drank the magic water. The magic water, and
it makes more sense than voodoo.
Well, yeah, sure. That's true.
All you need to do is you stick this giant needle down a baby worm's throat, and you come out being able to see flashbacks of what other people experience, just like the dog does, and the hills have eyes too. It makes perfect sense when people talk about. You know, well-constructed horror movies. They definitely talk about dog flashbacks from The Hills Have Eyes 2, which does it better, in my opinion. And I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm brave enough to do it. No one can stop me.
Certainly not me.
Because it's your podcast, so.
We're not going to stop
I you. Share it with you, Gina. And Nick, you are an invited guest. So you can offer up counter arguments, but I'm just going to come out and say it.
I have none.
So I also want it to be noted because this was the first time I really caught this because I had not seen this movie for two or so decades. But when Michael arrives for the funeral, there's a cadre of women who are consoling Ellen Brody. And to my surprise, one of them was the lady from the city council who refused to shut down the fucking beach twice. You hang around with this chick? Okay, that seems nuts to me. But the second one was even weirder, and that is the Kittner kid's mom who we last saw slapping the shit out of your husband.
Yeah, they were just, they were bringing back whoever was willing to give them like 20 minutes to be on camera.
Like, who are the nerds who are pointing at the screen and going, there's the Kittner's kid's mom? That's not fun. No part about this is fun.
You guys are forgetting this is a Christmas movie that's a story of forgiveness. And it's a beautiful Christmas miracle that all of these humans have set aside their differences and reconciled.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason they didn't bring back the mayor is because he died the year before this movie was made.
That's right. And that is truly the only reason, because they probably reached out to his gravesite and said, do you think maybe you could come back for just this one? It's like, I'm unavail. So they all decide after Sean's funeral, Michael goes, why don't you come down to the Caribbean with us? This will put your mind at ease.
Why don't you It'll be even you closer to the water?
Right. You'll be surrounded by water. But of course, she's already surrounded by water. She's going from one island to another one. I don't know why she would feel safe on fucking Amity where her youngest child just died in the mouth of a shark. And you might as well go down to the fucking Bahamas. And so they get in the local station wagon taxi. They take the ferry out. And the kid's having the greatest time of their life. And then you see Ellen Brody break down because she's once again realizing that, you know, her youngest child, she's never going to see them again. Her greatest fears have been realized. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, at the age I was when this came out, what are you looking forward to seeing this summer in the theaters? You know, like what big blockbusters you can go out and check out? And I would have said, you know, from the rooftops, I'm rushing to the theater to see a mom mourn her grown child on a ferry. This is this film's idea of a good time.
I'm realizing, as you say it, just how many modes of transportation they cover in this movie. You got submarines, planes, ferries, yeah. Trains.
Banana boats.
Really?
Banana boats.
Bleeding ferries.
Bleeding barges.
Trollers. Yeah. Dinghies, banana boats. You got it all. We see a paraglider at one point. This is where we're introduced to Michael Caine, who's once again, Gina, if we're going to start making t-shirts with great title cards, Michael Caine as Hoagie might have to be added to the list. That's up there. If we love Slick and we love Junior, you got to put Hoagie. So the great story, for those of you who have not heard, but Michael Caine writes about it in his autobiography. When he was asked about Jaws the Revenge, he said, I've never seen the movie, which by all accounts is terrible, but I have seen the house the paycheck built, and it's terrific.
I believe that. That's a perfect attitude.
He was building a house. He needed money. The last film he had done wasn't being released soon enough because they were holding it for Oscar contention. And they go, come and do this thing. It'll take like a week and a half and you'll be in the Bahamas and we'll pay you $1.5 million. And he's like, I'll be there. And yes, he ended up missing the Oscars because he was doing reshoots for this movie. But you know what? He's fine. He's got a great house. He did a ton of great movies after this. He's fine. But it does bring up an issue I have with this movie. Not the biggest problem, but this was in the 30s to 40s. And that is, never get in a plane with a pilot who has a ton of gambling debts.
Yeah, no, he's definitely going to just crash that plane while you're in it one of these days.
Yeah. Did you, either of you, foresee how many sweaty grandma nightmares that this movie had?
That was my band's name.
It is rare in a summer blockbuster to have not one, but multiple scenes in which a woman in her 50s or 60s wakes up sweaty from a nightmare. And so I have a question to ask you.
Listen, the first time that it was, I was like, oh, so she is going in the ocean. Like, I fully fell for it. I was like, did I miss something? She's just trying immersion therapy now. And then, when the shark gets her, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, look, it's a dream. I did it.
Going in the ocean is the most immersion therapy you can immerse. But this is when the first little odd additional theme seemed to pop up. In the movie, when she's swimming and when she awakens, and it's the little ding, 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 ding that happens in the soundtrack. Once I started to hear it over the course of the movie, I came up with a question I need to ask you both. And this is serious. Is this shark Freddy Krueger?
Oh.
Because the soundtrack is telling me he's Freddy Krueger. Because it's giving me a variation of a 1-2 Freddy's coming for you thing. When this shit happens, he's invading people's dreams. that he is a dream demon, Gina.
I mean, they really are trying to push this sort of almost supernatural angle in that, like, you know, this shark who was not around for the events of the previous two movies,
right,
yet has a, you know, a taste for vengeance.
Yeah, he definitely does. He wants a piece of that Brody meat, and one bite is not enough. It's like a Pringles. One, you had to get a taste for one. You got to pop them all.
So, yeah, I mean, if again, remember that, you know, this started out with, well, the book adaptation, you know, it's some voodoo shit. So, if you want to pose it that there's some sort of supernatural angle, you know, that makes about as much sense as everything else this movie does.
Yeah, this is
look, this shark has more of a motive than Freddy. Freddy's just evil, right? Like, the shark is out for revenge.
True.
We don't know what this shark's relationship was to any of the sharks that were originally slaughtered in the first couple movies. But look, I can give you a lot of good possibilities. We already talked about the environmental angle. The trash dumped in his environment, and now he's angry about it. That's it. That's all I got. I was hoping I'd come up with something else.
I just think it's funny how in the one of the most iconic moments in the original movie is Quint talking about when his fellow soldiers were getting picked off in the water by the sharks, and how they were just sort of soulless killers. All they knew was hunger. And how to, you know, and just, you know, taking everything, you know, taking whatever food that happened to be around without mercy. And now they're trying to put some sort of, you know, oh no, there's thought into the, they're putting thought into who they're choosing to kill. Like, you know, like I think that you are supposed to think that during the scene on the banana boat where, you know, he doesn't get the little girl, he gets the grown woman right next to the little girl.
He just times it wrong.
So it's not, timing it. I think it's like, you'll see how close I can get. You know?
Oh, okay. You
know, this shark is Robert De Niro in Cape Fear.
All we need is a sequence in which the shark is in a theater with the rest of the Brody family and is smoking a giant cigar and laughing inappropriately at the movie. That's the only thing we're missing.
If you look closely, the shark is covered in jailhouse tattoos.
You would think that we would get a view of that, because one of my smaller complaints about the film is that this particular shark loves to mosey. For as fast as he got down there, when he has the opportunity to do something like pull up next to a sub that contains a Brody, he does it with all of the caution of a grandpa leaving his blinker on trying to merge lanes.
Look, if there's one thing we've learned from Jaws 3D and Jaws the Revenge, it's that great white sharks love the feeling of the sun on their dorsal fin. They cannot get enough of it. It will distract them from whatever supernatural revenge plot they're in the middle of. They love to swim right near the surface with just their fin out of the water, shimmering in the Bahamanian daylight. That is their absolute favorite thing. And so mosey they will.
And it doesn't matter if the foam of that fin has broken off and the tip is just dangling over on its side, which is a thing you can't see in this movie because the way it is currently formatted, it was originally shot to be shown in a kind of 4:3 television format, believe it or not. But when they released it, it was in a 35mm anamorphic. And so you can totally see the giant mechanical arm that is underneath this shark all the time and broken fins that you wouldn't have seen otherwise because it was not meant to be seen in this format.
I'm pretty sure that the mechanical arm is actually just logs. As we know, this shark loves them and uses them as bait repeatedly throughout the film. Sure. There's a bunch of important close-ups of logs. And so I think it's a common misconception that that's the mechanics.
So it's like the excuse of like that this is not how the universe works. Well, how does it? It's turtles. Well, what's below the turtle? It's turtles all the way down, but it's shark, then logs.
Yeah, exactly. And then the bottom of a swimming pool that's supposed to fill in for the ocean.
Would you, if you were headed down to the Caribbean, Jamaica way, would you pack a lot of extraordinarily long blue sweaters that also have shoulder pads? Because Helen Brody has a look.
Well, it's 1987, right? So yes,
yeah, I mean, yeah. The shoulder pads were, you know, they were definitely a thing.
But sweaters in a tropical isle feels like not... I mean, who wants to wear a sweater in Jamaica?
She's in mourning, Patrick.
It's Christmas.
She's wearing a lot of white for a woman in mourning, Gina. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, doesn't this whole film take place in like the week after the death of her son?
Well, they do, I guess, kind of, because they definitely pass through New Year's Eve at one point when we get to see Lance Guest, who's hot as shit in this movie. Lance Guest looks great in this film. He might not have a great role and he might not do much with it. I mean, but if you were looking for a hot dude,
he's no Dennis Quaid. I could tell you that much.
Oh, I don't even beg to differ. I simply differ. Gina, I think he is hotter in this movie than Quaid is in Jaws 3D. First of all, he's not blitzed out of his mind on cocaine. His pupils are not dilated the entire film.
So you're not into that.
As far as sex dudes are going, I like the beard he's got going on. He looks great with his shirt off. The wavy hair is doing it for me. In fact, there's a lot of hot people in this movie. Mario Van Peebles, Marvin Van Peebles, Lynn Whitfield is a total smoke show in this film. Michael Caine is real easy on the eyes. When they fire up the jets, you've got it all over him. As Lance Guest comes and says, "Can I dance with my mother? Because I'm afraid that Michael Caine is going to romance you away." That is a real fucking choice on this movie's part.
Yeah.
Do soundtrack that with the Jets of all fucking bands. You've got it all over him as she dances with her own son. It's a choice. Gina, I have a question specifically for you.
Yes.
How often do you threaten your spouse with a lit welding torch? And how often does that result in sex?
I mean, if I had a welding torch. I mean, the closest I have is like one of those like candle lighters. Mm-hmm. But those aren't very intimidating.
Yeah.
Honestly, okay, this is, I think, actually the biggest problem in the film is that that torch, that it's Chekhov's torch and it never gets off in the third act because I was thinking somebody's blowtorching some sashimi in this movie. I can't wait till he has to use this against the shark. I don't know how it's getting in their barn or whatever, but he's going to have to use it. And then that
it's unfortunately a little too inland to be used and it's never seen on
well,
on
you'd
barge,
think so,
but
right?
I agree
how
with you.
How are we going to fight shark with fire? I was very excited.
We've fought shark with compressed air. We've fought shark with electricity. We've fought shark with pane of glass that he defeats.
Look, how this is Jaws 4. You can't just take out a harpoon. You know what I mean? I want to see.
What if
I
we used
see.
An entire boat as a harpoon, though, Nick? Yeah. Have you thought about that?
I did not see. Well, that would explode a shark, I do believe, yes. If you did that.
If you use it right. Would you, Nick, if you're saying to yourself, I want to be able to track this shark, and I want to be able to do it with his heartbeat, which mysteriously kind of sounds like the Jaws theme. Would you stab that shark in the cheek to get a heart reading, or would you maybe go a tad bit south?
Just so we're clear, shark's heart is where in the shark's body? Because I'm not
assuming
a marine biologist. Maybe it's in its fin.
Well, it's got a lot of mouth area and it's got a lot of stomach, but I'm going to go middle of the shark just to be safe. But right off the bat, I'm going to tell you, it's not located in the cheeks.
Okay, it's not in the cheek. It's probably not in the tail.
Yes. And just for the perverts in the audience, I'm not talking about the shark's butt. I'm not saying this particular shark is all caked up. That is something for you to imagine. That is for your fan fiction. That has no place here.
Okay, but look, I imagine a shark is a lot like a whale, and my knowledge of whale biology stems entirely from Pinocchio, and so I believe sure, that a okay. shark is hollow on the inside. Yeah. And so in order, if I was trying to get a shark's heart, I would assume yeah. that it's somewhere near the exterior of the body, probably towards the front. Now, you call it cheek. A shark doesn't have a neck, so...
Yeah.
We're kind of all torso here. I don't think this is a problem.
It's neck to torso to fin.
I would get it directly in the cheek is my answer, Patrick.
Okay.
I would shoot the shark to try to get its heartbeat.
Stone cold logic. I can't fight against it. The other, I would say, in the top 10 of big problems for the movie.
So we're only at 10?
We've already gone down to the 40s. We're definitely, there's a top 50 list, but I would say this is near, not a top five, but definitely top 10. Is that for whatever reason, the sharks tend to get worse as the franchise goes on, which is weird because you barely see the first one and it also looks kind of fake, but you're having such a good time, you don't fucking care.
I think the CGI sharks of Jaws 3D, I don't know, CGI is the wrong word, cartoon animated, yeah. computer,
the photochemical,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think the models. I don't even know if we're in the realm of being able to say what's less plausible or more unlike a shark. The very obvious shark dolls of Jaws 4 or the like sketched on an early computer in Jaws 3. I mean, I don't know if we're downhill. I don't know if there's a hill. Well, we're lost.
I, for one, love that transparent shark at the end who skids to a stop to break a window inside.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask if it was his first time watch, if you really love the shark, like very slowly coming towards the window.
Just that. I jotted down in my notes that this is the ultimate, this is the pinnacle of the whole franchise. That's what I wrote. This is the true pinnacle of the whole franchise. The 3D shark coming through the glass. It can only go downhill from there.
We have to come up with the terminology for an extra in a Jaws movie who's very willing to give up a leg for a Brody kid, because it's kind of a theme that someone loses a leg when that shark is going for a Brody. It happens in the first one, the second one, the third one, and this one. That lady on the banana boat, because of the shark's poor timing, because he just, like, you can't win them all, ends up taking her leg and the rest of her down. But who are these sacrificial victims? Like, what is it inside of them that says, not today, shark, why don't you taste some thigh of mine?
Yeah, maybe they want revenge on the Brodies too for that. Like, hey, can we spread the wealth a little bit here, please?
Can we be certain that that woman has no Brody DNA in her? The friend's mom, I think the friend's name is Margaret.
Sure.
What if, do you know what I mean? We never actually know. If it's just some random character, it could be a distant cousin.
Hey, we could 23andMe her and see if they're not connected in some sort of distant cousin way. Absolutely. Maybe she's got just enough, you know? That's certainly a possibility. And so after the attack on the youngest child at the beach on a banana boat, which this random woman whose name we do not know and is not mourned, sacrifices her life to keep her alive. That's when Ellen hops in a boat and is like, fuck very y'all. Quickly. I'm going to hunt this shark down by myself. How? I don't know. And that's when I came to the realization.
Not even the blowtorch. Secretly, she got the blowtorch.
No, she's just got a boat. She's got a busted mast. That's all she's got. But I came to the realization that this might be the first instance of like a Liam Neeson old man kicks ass movie. She's like, I have a certain set of skills and I'm going to use them against you, shark. And she gets in a boat and she just putts away without a plan. She's like, fuck it. Yeah. It's between you and me.
It's MacGyver. She's going to find the tools to kill the shark out on the sea.
Yeah, weirdly enough, she does. That's the plan. Find the tools. The tools are found by other people. Oh man! So
look, if I'm writing the movie, I leave everything the same, but she brings the blowtorch.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. This movie needs more blowtorch. Also, if we're just going to talk about that particular marriage, if you know about the existence of a great white shark and you don't tell your wife, that is grounds for divorce. You don't have to go through court proceedings. You just tell the local constabulary, we're divorced now. Why? He didn't tell me about the great white shark that almost killed my kid. And they're like, dunzo.
Yeah,
you guys are torn asunder.
Just to look, if you just see a shark, that's one thing. But if you're insane mother who believes that this demon shark is hunting you, and will travel thousands of miles to find you, will show up in a place where great white sharks usually aren't, and then the great white shark shows up like the next day, they just act like, oh, we're scientists, so let's study it. And it's like, wait a second. Shouldn't you study the fact that it followed you here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's strange.
You have personal experience with this. Even if you don't count three, which Universal certainly did not, even though they asked all the major actors to come back and replay these roles as completely different people. The point is, you have experience with sharks. And once you see one again where it should not be, that's when you tell Mario Van Peebles, no, we're going to tell the authorities about this fucking shark. And you definitely tell your wife. You just do.
I've never written a marine biology grant proposal before, but I think a really great basis for one would be, hey, this shark is psychically connected to my mother. And I think that's worthy of study. Could we get funding beyond just tagging conch shells to study a magical demon shark that's tracking us across the whole ocean?
Like, you tell me the Navy doesn't want to know about that? The Navy, at one point in movie history,
the military applications are
unwittingly. He taught a shark to assassinate the president of the United States. Oh, I'm sorry. A dolphin.
I just don't know how Michael isn't constantly telling every single person he knows all the time about how his father single-handedly killed two separate great white sharks.
Not one, but two.
Like, how is that not like first date information with his wife?
Yeah. My dad saw a bunch of grizzly bears in Canada. I talk about that all the time to people who barely know me, just because it's something to say. This is way more interesting and personal to him. And he's mums the word about it. That seems weird.
Yeah. And if you're going by, assuming that parts one and two are canon, Michael himself had numerous up close, life-threatening encounters. And saw several people die before his very eyes.
He's seen so much of the inside of a shark from the outside. So much of it.
But he's just
was eaten by one yesterday.
He's just like, this isn't something I need to bring up ever.
This is just dumb bullshit. I'm going to run around the island. That's his reaction to it. It is a very weird response. Again, there's no wrong way to mourn. But again, maybe top 50 wrong ways to mourn is to just run around an island, I guess.
I just also think that this is really dismissive of people who study sharks versus conch shells and just like treats like all marine biologists. Like they're these guys, like there's something, you know what I mean? Like, they don't need to have any shark expertise. They're just going to dive into just like, oh, we'll make a tracker and we'll start studying sharks as if that's not like a field of expertise you probably have to go to grad school for, I assume.
It's rude. Right, yeah.
Dismissive.
Like,
and not for nothing while I'm on it. While I'm on it, not for nothing, but they're like, there's no, don't worry, mom, there's no great white sharks in the Bahamas. The water's warm. It's like, have you ever been to Australia? What are you talking about? Like, of course there's great white sharks down there. The first time you watch the movie, you're like, oh, that makes sense. I must like the cold waters off of New England. And then you think about it for 5 seconds and you're like, wait a second, that's not real. That's not science. Of course there's already great whites down there.
The frigid waters of Australia? Sure, yeah. Everyone understands.
And you Google
that.
It, and it's like, yep, so, there's sharks everywhere.
And so she takes off on this boat, and then Michael, after coming clean to his wife and leaving her screaming, why didn't you tell me about that fucking shark already? He drafts Mario Van Peebles into chasing after her in dinghies. They run into Hoagie. He's like, let's get in a plane. They find her boat, and he's like, hold on to your biscuits. Lands the plane in the water. This is not a plane. I'm just telling you right now. You would be more helpful in a plane than doing what you're doing, which is land the plane near a shark. And he's like, swim for it? That's not a plane.
Yeah.
It doesn't help
at all.
It's
not a seaplane.
It's really not. That plane is donezo. It's not like he's living in endless amounts of planes. He's losing a lot at the craps table nightly. So
he's been looking for the reason to crash the plane and cash in on the insurance money this whole time.
Right. No.
Maybe he's in on it with the shark. Did
maybe
we just crack it?
I think you nailed it. This is no longer a problem.
We knew this,
it's not even on the problem sheet. This is going in the plus column.
The shark. Someone tipped those cows. It wasn't a shark that tipped the cows at the beginning of the movie. Right. It was Hoagie.
And we know that Amity is all mobbed up. So this all is starting to make sense.
This is an elaborate, like, body heat style. This entire movie is Hoagie. Hoagie has been plotting for years. He's Kathleen Turner in Body Heat. He's got this elaborate ruse to entrap this woman, and it's all just to get the insurance money for the planes to get him out of his gambling debts.
Yeah.
By the way, Body Heat ends on, I think it ends in the Bahamas. She's like sipping a coconut at the end of that movie. Spoiler alert.
So are you proposing that Body Heat is a secret prequel to Jaws the Revenge?
Yes, I am.
This is all coming together. I like this more.
Is exactly what I'm proposing. That's where that's where Hoagie and the shark got the idea.
They plotted it together. No,
they watched Body Heat. The shark and Hoagie, always they're best friends. Trice they're in on it style. Together. Yeah, they're lovers.
Yeah.
And
this is
all
coming together.
They watched Body Heat.
They're
they were
lovers.
Like, you know what?
That's how he got the reputation. He's been fucking sharks.
Well,
Jesus.
How does you tell me how he gets in that water. The shark doesn't eat him at the end of the movie. You think he's gone for? He's not. They're in on it together. We figured it out.
I keep challenging you on the subject, and you find ways to justify it. It's all coming together.
Can't argue against the logic that I'm spitting here.
Mario Van Peebles comes up with a device to make the shark groan, complain, I guess, of electroshock tummy problems.
Oh my God.
He keeps leaping out of the water awkwardly.
Hey, stop that.
Stop it. My tum-tum is sensitive. And Ellen, like, he crawls out on the front of that ship like he's the king of the world and ends up getting almost swallowed, but not. And so, you know, Michael's just firing that thing that he shoved in his stomach that we didn't see. And he goes, whoa, which I just want the people at home to know that audio is from a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Is it?
That it is.
Oh my God.
Look, they had 9 months. They did very well with finding a shark roar.
And listen, it's not the first Jaws movie with a roar. It happens in the first movie, which they reused from the truck in Duel, which also roars when it dies. So again, we're not coming to Jaws the Revenge for realism. But then he makes it roar and it leaps up in the air and somehow Ellen spears it with the ship.
It's not even like leaping. It's kind of sort of waddling on its tail.
Yes.
Towards the bow of the ship.
Yeah. He's really almost daring her to spear him with.
It's like give her you're at a bar and like, you know, some drunk dude starts. He decides he's gonna like, you know, tear open his shirt, like, mm-hmm. you know, to show you how tough he is. That's kind of what the shark's doing here. Like, come on.
And so he explodes because. That's what happens when you puncture a shark through his tummy.
I mean, I like I said, if you have to weigh both endings, I mean, uh-huh. the one where he just like spears him, like makes more sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense in the sense that the shark just kind of more or less walks into it despite not having legs.
Yeah,
but also, like, what did they put? What did that thing that they planted it actually have explosives? Because if so, they did not do a good job of establishing that.
No, because again, the explosion element of this occurred after the film was released in theaters. They're just like, the audience is saying it's gotta explode. Someone get a toy shark and make that shit explode, which is why it looks so fucking bad. And then they recut the movie, cut a bunch of different prints, shipped it off to everyone. And lo and behold, 5 days later, that shark starts exploding.
You know what there's a surprisingly little amount of in this movie? Is people in the water with the shark at the same time, because you would think it sounds silly, but this movie is almost entirely people on boats getting eaten by sharks. Sean at the beginning gets eaten on a boat. There's the girl's friend's mom gets eaten on the banana boats. They're fine. Yeah. Everybody in the water swimming around is fine. And boats are the place you don't want to be in. Jaws 4. They get
too close to the edge.
Yeah. Everybody's
just getting, when you thought it was safe to be in a boat, this fucker will come up and swim. Those, you home.
They need to just, you want to tell them, just jump in the water. You'll be fine. Just go swim around. No one gets eaten swimming in Jaws 4.
No one dies in the water. Mario Van Peebles gets in the water and manages to survive because he's in fine. The water now.
They don't fall, like at the end, Michael and, oh my God, what's his mom's name? Elaine?
Ellen.
Oh, Ellen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ellen doesn't, they fall in the water after the shark blows up and it's shot. It's like fake slow-mo in post to make it like dramatic because the explosion apparently knocks them off the boat. And it's like, that's not suspenseful because the shark's been blown up. You should have them. This is like writing a shark movie 101 is you have them fall into the water while the shark is still alive. This is, why are they doing it?
Yeah,
they're not just backwards. You can fix that in editing.
They don't have time for that. They don't have time for that.
Just rearrange the shots. Have them fall in the water and be like, oh, is the shark going to eat them? We'll just assume that's what's happening. And then the shark blows up.
No, this time it's personal. So she's got to be at the wheel when she stamps that shark. And here's this solemn thing that I have when it comes to this show. We can't talk about Jaws the Revenge longer than we talked about John Carpenter's Christine. We just can't. It's a hard and fast rule. We cannot Gina called this early on. This is a movie we're either going to talk about for 15 minutes or 150. There's just no in between. And I probably could. But it is time to choose our own death venture. And that is where we decide of the deaths, the improbable deaths in this film. If you were forced to die in one of those two ways, which one would it be and why? Actually, let's say it's three, okay? The first one, a shark lures you into leaning over a boat to retrieve a log. You lose an arm, and then he somehow sucks the rest of you over. Chomp, chomp.
Kirby-style death.
Number two, Kirby-style death. Two is lose a leg in a banana boat, right? You play the caboose in a banana boat. This is what can happen. Or three, you are stabbed through the tummy by a sailboat. And so, Nick, you are our guest, and I ask you to go first.
I'm going to go with number four, which is a fear-induced heart attack that happens only, it is reported on in the movie, and it actually isn't.
It has to happen during the course of the film. We can't talk about it after the fact. It's got to be one of the three deaths we see on screen.
How dare you suggest that Roy Schneider is not in Jaws the Revenge? There is a portrait of him.
Only his signed 8x10 is in this movie. He has
been sainted and put on the wall. okay, then I'll go for the first one. I like the misdirect where we think that Sean might actually be in this movie. And I do think that it looks, it's the funniest that a log was used as bait. So I'll go for that on Christmas.
That makes sense.
I like sure. that there's the children's choir.
You're
singing.
Going out on a high.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's memorable.
It's true. That tombstone is going to be fucking hilarious. Gina, what say you?
We're not counting the alternate ending where Jake gets it.
No, I didn't see the alternate ending. It's hard to see the alternate ending. I mean, you kind of see what happens and then he pops up again. So I'm going to go with
he's not there
three.
At the end where they're all getting on the plane. I'll put it that way.
Well, he's in a hospital.
He looks fine.
Recovering. he seems just fine. He's got a lot of jagged puncture holes in his torso. I'm sure he's fine.
It fixes his Jamaican accent. Now it actually makes it.
Highly inconsistent Jamaican accent, I might add. Yes.
Yeah, Jim. I was gonna say getting my leg bitten off on a banana boat, because I actually have been on a banana boat. But all right, you know what? It's so stupid. I really love the shark kind of like just lumbering onto the stern of a boat, and then just somehow it just triggers an explosion.
It's an explosion. Yeah, because no matter how bad the stabbing would feel, the explosion happens so quickly, you're bye-bye town at that point.
Yeah, it's like he almost set his own kill switch off. You know, it's like when those spies have like a cyanide capsule.
Sure.
So they bite him when they're captured. Yeah, he has like a kill switch and he explodes.
It explodes. Would this count as a get bunk, Gina? Because he is stabbed by a sailboat, but the sailboat causes an explosion.
No, I don't think so. I think the boat would have to come through something else, stabbing him before we can count.
Okay.
Like if it came through another boat, then that would count. But it's just the shark and the boat.
All right. Well, this brings us to the plug portion of this. Nick, you've got a movie coming out. Want to tell people about it and where they can find it and all that good stuff.
It's also a Christmas movie, actually. In about the same way that Jaws the Revenge is, where it takes place at Christmas. It's called Hanky Panky. And it is, it's more of an intentional comedy, I would say, than Jaws the Revenge, in that it's intentionally a comedy. Okay.
That's a way to sell it. It's more of an intentional comedy than Jaws the Revenge.
Yes, okay. It's Jaws the Revenge, except instead of a shark, it's a top hat.
Okay.
So that's all you really need to know, I think, to understand the tone of it. It's coming out on 420 weekend, so Friday, April 19th. It'll be on Amazon, Google, Apple, and Vudu, V-U-D-U, not to be confused with the voodoo in the novelization of Jaws the Revenge.
Which will soon become Fandango at home, because why not? Because that's what people have been demanding this entire time. Change that one silly name to a different silly name. People should absolutely check it out. Gina, where can people find you on these here internets?
I write about television and movies at thespool.net. I have I do my own separate writing about movies and television and pop culture in general. And Gina watches things at substack.com. And I am on most social medias under Gina Does Things.
Do it today, people. Check it out. Josh Hollis does all of our artwork. Go to RevengeBonnieMemphis at Bandcamp.com for this tune and all the other remixes. And of course, you can find us on the various socials with the exception of Twitter, fuck that place. And find us on Patreon for super fun bonus content like Q&A, chat by chats, and bonus episodes where we talk about fun movies and occasional complete bombs like unfortunately not much of a selling point, but we watched the director of Hell Knight's return to form, Reform School Girls. It is unfortunate. but features a lot of ladies in lingerie and a lot of shower scenes, if that's for you. And that just about does it for now. But don't worry, folks. The Aquatic Attack April will continue for myself, for Nick, and Gina. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much.